Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a weekend edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, let's pick it up from where we ended yesterday's failed attempt, time travel.
Okay. I had no idea. I thought we were going to start again fresh, but if you want to pick it up where we were, how do we do this then?
We're going to start right with time travel. Then we'll go to LCBO lineups and we'll work from there. But the time travel idea was absolutely brilliant.
Well, why don't we just start again and then reintroduce it?
All right.
I got other stuff I want to talk about.
Where do you want to begin?
The beginning.
All right. So how was your lineup yesterday at the LCBO?
No. Like, start like a fresh show. Like,
this is a fresh show. We've already started.
You didn't do the, hey, everybody, it's Macko and Cause.
Actually, I did. You weren't paying attention.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a bad start. Here's the thing. We were going to pick it back up, right? I went to the liquor store yesterday.
Yes.
I guess I've just proven that now.
Did you finish that bottle of Whitehaven Marlboro Sauvignon Blanc?
I got to about the 80% mark.
Okay, so about like 20 ounces.
I guess. Yeah. That sounds about right. It was tasty.
Yeah. It's a full-bodied, very aromatic, medium plus across the board sort of Sauvignon Blanc.
Well, as we've discussed, my palate is fairly uncultivated. So apparently I like big, shiny objects.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong. I don't apologize for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like big, shiny music too, you know. Now I'm thinking about this, like you're in my head a little bit. Like as I was drinking it, I'm like, is this like the cream soda of wine?
No, it's not that. I would say the cream soda of wine would be some giant mass-produced Chardonnay from, like, say, Chile or something like that. But, I mean, what I would say with those wines is that they are big, they're bold, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it, but there is a snobby element in the wine world where, you know, oh, it's got to be Sancerre and it's got to have more mineral and less fruit. And there is this snobby thing that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're a man of the people, and you do call your podcast Matt Talks to Interesting People About Wine and Stuff. Is that what it's called?
Close enough.
Yeah. I'm going to listen one of these days. I heard it's good. Speaking of which, I got a lot of stuff I want to get to, including something we threw out yesterday about commissioners and time travel. But since we're talking about pods, since we spoke last, Joe Rogan just signed a $100 million deal with Spotify. We make a podcast. We're in the business. Like, what do you think?
Well, Spotify, I mean, this podcast is on Spotify.
Totally.
So let's see. Bill Simmons probably got like 200 million at least, if Rogan got 100. So yeah, what do we get, 50?
Yeah, I'm thinking like I'm waiting for a check for at least, you know, as the great Bob and Doug McKenzie once said, you know, 10 bucks is 10 bucks.
Yeah, there's nothing better than than mailbox money when you go to your mailbox and there's a check waiting for you.
You know what I keep waiting for, Maddie? Mm. I keep waiting for, like, there's a lot of really popular sports podcasts, right? But I keep waiting for the way that the sports companies, ESPN accepted, do business starts to filter more into audio content. Like, it still feels like they all started as TV stations, and so they're still obsessed with TV. But I don't know about you, man. Like, I get very little of my news now from TV, and almost all of it from either Twitter or podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I get a little more from TV than you do, but you're right. The piece of the pie, I think in general, it's so much bigger in terms of just news, in terms of Twitter and also podcasts, because it allows you to pick and choose, you know, the voices you want to hear.
Like, for example, TSN does insider trading, right?
Yeah.
And for years, it's been a great segment. And in a lot of ways, in the hockey world, what they say, like, a lot of stuff becomes public conversation after those three guys or four guys say it on TSN, right?
Yeah.
Why isn't there a 2 or 3 time a week podcast called Insider Trading where they're just breaking news all the time and then the TV station is reacting to it? Like, why would you wait until 7 o'clock on a Tuesday to break a big story?
I think it's just because when you're such the big traditional company, I mean, I think it's hard. I think, you know, they've got Darren Dreger and Ferraro. They do one now, like once a week. Duffy's got something, you know, like Bob McKenzie had his for a while. But you're right. I think there's probably something about you want TV to get it first. It's some sort of prestige thing that TV gets it first.
It just feels like such a, and I'm wondering, like, a deal like Joe Rogan's $100 million Spotify deal. Like, I wonder if this is just another shovel of dirt on the casket of traditional sports newscasts, you know? Like, I mean, Rogan's not a sports guy, obviously, but just the idea that you could have a personality and an audience that's so tuned in that it's worth $100 million. Like, think back to 5 years ago, you know, when did we start this pod? 3 years ago?
Yeah, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, like even then, the idea that your biggest star could be a podcaster was ludicrous.
Oh, yeah. But, oh, absolutely.
You know, and I like most of TSN's stuff now, like I listen to Duffy's podcast, and it's all kind of like slice of life stuff or stories. Like McKenzie would do some stuff, but clearly he didn't want to do an insider trading type pod.
Yeah, no. You know, he wanted like, more fun.
Yeah, and his pod's really good, actually. But I don't know. I just keep thinking to myself, like, I get most of my life now from podcasts. Like I get enough headlines from Twitter that I have a sense of what's going on. And then I've got about 15 to 20 pods that I listen to semi-regularly and 3 or 4 that I listen to all the time. And almost all of my analysis comes from people I trust in the pod world.
I think you're still on the extreme end in terms of the numbers of podcasts you listen to. Like I think just because you grew up in media, so you were going to adopt all of this. You know, it's the same thing with Twitter. We assume everyone is on it, but my group of friends, maybe 1 or 2 are on it and they barely use it. So I think you're on the extreme end, but I also do agree with you that I think that places like TSN should do more with podcasts and have almost a podcast wing because, you know, sometimes you can break news and then you've got that content first and then have TV react to the podcast versus the other way around.
You know, Kos, it goes back to that thing we were talking about a couple weeks ago about how during this pandemic sheltering at home experience, none of us have stopped talking about sports. We're just not talking about current sports. But the, you know, at least in my mind, the desire for conversation about it is at least as important as the game itself. And that's probably only going to be more true in the future.
Well, right now, I mean, what are we all talking about? We're just talking about NHL playoff proposals and baseball players don't like owners and football's just doing football. They don't care. Season's going on. Nothing changes with us.
So funny. Football, the CBS of sports.
Oh, yeah. That means, if they are CBS, then is the commissioner Tom Selleck? Blue blood?
Great, great, great point. Yes. Yes, he is. Let's talk. I mean, we're going to do a lot of AMC content today because this is the genius thing you're doing on your radio show.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like the after show to your show. Although, really, your show is like an after show to your own show. But
it really is.
It really is. Thoughts, initial thoughts on the proposal 24-team NHL playoff tourney.
I'm all for it. Montreal versus Pittsburgh, Chicago versus Edmonton, Toronto not facing Boston. Give me it all. And I love when all the like GMs were scoffing that this is made for TV. Well, that's all we have is made for TV. So yeah, throw in more teams. Make them popular teams like the Rangers and Montreal and Chicago. I'm down for it all. And yeah, what if Carey Price goes on a 2-week heater and suddenly a team that had a 1% chance of making the playoffs gets to the finals? Well, fine. Throw an asterisk on it. I don't care. 2020 is one big asterisk. I love it.
You know what? But to your point, like about Carey Price getting hot, like think about when Edmonton years back, I guess it was what, 2006, and they went on a heater and next thing you know, they're in the final, right?
Yeah.
Like these things happen.
Yeah.
And they don't just happen sometimes. They literally happen every year. Like, think about last year's winner. Like, St. Louis was pretty bad.
They were dead last in January.
And then their goalie got super hot. They figured a bunch of things out, and they became unbeatable, and then they wound up winning. Like, this is hockey. Like, it's not an if. It's a when. It's just which one of these teams is going to get really hot and overperform, you know, who we thought they were.
And just,
you know what makes me, sorry, yeah. go ahead, Maddie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the other thing is get rid of the idea of fair and conventional. We don't live in fair and conventional right now.
I'm not even sure it ever was fair. I mean, it might've been conventional, but I'm not sure it was fair. Like, if you're really trying to determine the best team, there's a lot of things that you would do differently about a tournament. First of all, it would be held in a neutral site. Like, maybe the seeding would be based on where teams wound up in the regular season. But, like, the college playoff, like, those games are on neutral sites. There should be, mm-hmm. if you really want to know who the better team is, there should be no home court advantage or home rink advantage. If you just want to figure out who is the better team.
Well, and yeah, I mean, one team, they get an advantage because the crowd in Nashville is just better than the crowd in New York or something.
Well, that's, you know, one, that's a secret weapon. Like, you think about the Seattle Seahawks and, you know, the incredible, like, all across football, you see, like, there's just different markets that are make it harder to play. Or you win the right to play if you're a cold weather outdoor team, like some of these NFC games where maybe New Orleans has to go and play in Lambeau or somewhere like that, you know? Like, yeah. It's just, like, there's inequities that are built in. But I'm just saying, if you really wanted to know, like a scientific experiment, who the best team was, you would try to make the playing field as level as possible. But what we have is you try to earn advantages. And also just gate. Like, honestly, think about the Raptors and Golden State if they'd been playing in some court in Disneyland, and it was just televised. Like, as a fan base, we would get ripped off. That would have been awful. But it might have been more. But it might have been more fair.
I don't want fair. I don't want scientific. I want bells and whistles and fun. If I want fair and science, I'll go back to grade 10, where I got 53% in chemistry.
That's awesome. In grade 11, I got 51% in physics. Ooh. And I believe 59 in grade 10 biology. I was not a good student.
I never got it to grade. I never got to grade 11 science. I took one of those OACs for finite math for a couple weeks, and then just one day I just got up and said, "Peace, I'm out of here. There's got to be another history class I can take."
Okay, cause.
Yeah.
Let's just go head to head. Let's set a clock. Do you got a timer? Let's do it. I got a timer. Let's do a 2-minute sidebar. Let's make the case. Which one of us was the less committed high school student?
All right.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm going to set my timer to 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm so techie these days. All right. You ready? On your marks, get set, go.
All right. So I was in grade 9 advanced French with all my friends on day 1. Teacher walked in speaking only French. I turned around, looked at my twin brother and said, "I got to get out of here." So I went down to the general level where I got 90s because it was me and all the bad kids. And all the bad kids, they used to lock the teacher out of the room when she left the room. So I was getting 90s because I could pronounce boat and blue. Math, I took grade 10 and I think 11. But the moment I could take an OAC, I took finite, dropped it as soon as I could. And in one of my English classes, I found Dragonlance poems and used them to inspire me to write for a poetry assignment because I knew the teacher would have no way of knowing what the hell Dragonlance was.
Okay, I'm going to buzz in here. In grade 11 history, I sat down. I did really well in the first two terms. And at the beginning of the third term, I did the math and realized I can't fail even if I don't hand anything in for the rest of the year. And so I didn't.
I failed grade 9 math, had to do it again in summer school. Also, one of my favorite history classes, we would go for all-you-can-eat Pizza Hut. And sometimes I'd come back and I'd tell the teacher, "I just need to lie on the floor for a moment because we just came back from the hut."
Ooh, that's pretty good. In grade 13, I had 84 days absent. 84 days absent. And you know what? I think I was probably more cocky than I was non-committal. I remember my grade in grade 13 English was 78, and the teacher very sweetly came up and said, "You know, here's your grade, initial by, you know, have a nice year." You know, she goes, "Really, Bob, this probably should have been like 10% higher." And I looked at her and I said, "It probably should have been 20.
I think that was a good sidebar.
Yeah. Okay, wait, one more arrogant Bob story from high school. So I was in level 6 English, which was sort of like not advanced, but they called it enriched. And I failed it. And so I went into lobby. I did not get along with the teacher. And I went in and I said, "Well, why don't you just give me like an advanced level 5 one and we'll call it even." and then I went off to go to summer school. She said it doesn't work that way. And I said, but look, you know there's no test. This is a real conversation, Matt. I said, there's no test you can give me that I can't pass. So how can you really fail me? This is supposed to be an indication of whether or not I have the ability to move on. We both know I can. And she was like, well, you know, it doesn't work that way. It's like, you know, could you become a doctor if you didn't go to med school? You have to do the work. And you know what I said to her?
What?
I said, what if you're just a born surgeon? And I walked out.
Oh, my God, you arrogant prick.
Yeah, I walked out right into summer school. Way to go, dummy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you would have been smart. You would have been funny and sweet, and you would have gotten the 51.
Yeah, exactly. Professional buddy, Matt Koss.
You and I in a nutshell. All right, so I got a question for you about this NHL tournament.
Yeah.
What happens if someone tests positive for COVID? Like, has anyone talked about, like, would a team at that point be disqualified? Like, would they all have to stop playing because they could be infected but asymptomatic?
That has not been finalized as of yet. Right now, we're dealing with a seeding. The medical implications are far harder and scary to think about. So let's just focus on Winnipeg versus Calgary in the first round.
It's kind of fun, but I sort of look at this like anybody who's complaining about the formatting, I don't get it. I mean, none of it's real.
Yeah.
And none of it can possibly be what it was. So whatever comes up is going to be fun / stupid, and we just got to accept it. But I can't see it actually happening because there's just too many variables.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's so many. I mean, so yeah, that's why to me, I'm like, okay, hey, this is fun. It's empty calorie. It's a Cinnabon when you're drunk. You're not going to remember eating it the next day. So you get all the calories without any of the flavor history.
Yeah, Cinnabon, or as Raymond Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine calls it, Cinnabon.
How many times have you gone through that show?
About 6 or 7 now.
So do you want to get to, do you have any other 20 NHL proposal, or do you want to get to time travel?
No, I'm happy that we're discussing something that could possibly happen, even if I'm skeptical that it will. So I feel like we've gotten our hypothetical nummies for the day. Yeah, let's go even further. Let's lean in. Let's do hypothetical time travel.
By the way, Bob, considering where things are right now, I think there's just as much of a chance we'll discover time travel and use it to help sports commissioners that we are going to get a 24-team playoff run in the NHL with no problems with coronavirus.
Just so we're clear on this bit, this sort of came up randomly in conversation as one of our many sidebars from yesterday's show, which we couldn't use because the audio was too bad. But you've fallen in love with this bit. So do you want to stick handle it?
Yeah, so I love this. And don't think I didn't put it down as part of my script for Monday's show for game day. But the idea is if we could go back in time and help each of the four current commissioners fix one thing about their game, what would it be? If we could go full 88 miles per hour and get in the DeLorean, what would the one move we would do? And we're not going to go and do this huge heady thing like we go back 100 years ago and make integration happen a lot sooner. That's obviously the right answer. Much like in Back to the Future, they should have murdered Hitler versus go watch Marty's parents make out. Like, we acknowledge that. So, you know, it's also a sort of a fun little exercise. And for instance, the one that you came up with, actually, I think you came up with most of them. For baseball, Rob Manfred goes back to the Houston Astros on day one when they're thinking of doing their cheating scandal and ripping away the garbage can and saying, no, you're not doing this.
And can you imagine how much easier Rob Manfred's life would be if he didn't have to deal with the fact that his two-time World Series champion is hated by everyone in the league? Like, we forget now because of COVID, but they were getting plunked every game in spring training, and they were going to be booed mercilessly everywhere they went. That's your reigning champions. And they didn't even deny it. They did it. They're cheaters. It's like they're saying, well, we know they cheated, but what can we do about it? It's your league. You can do anything you want about it.
Yep. Now, one small correction, because, you know, someone will tweet in. They've only won it once. The Nationals won it last year, but they got to the finals. They won the World Series 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. So just it's just a minor
You're
thing.
Right, sorry. You're right.
Yeah, it's fine. You're right. It's fine.
I got a Saturday morning fogginess going on. So
that's 20 ounces of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. But yeah, Rob Manfred, and also, you know, you're right. His life would be so much easier. The best thing about coronavirus was we stopped talking about the Houston Astros, but they were going to be the single greatest villain in sports. It was going to be wonderful, and now that's gone.
The funny thing is, this is what Rob Manfred would want, but I would argue for the fans, you would want that cheating to happen. Like, maybe not if you're fans of the LA Dodgers, because, you know, there was the Game 7 Yu Darvish performance, and who knows how much that was influenced by what the Astros were doing. And they probably were the best team in baseball that year.
Mm-hmm. And the Yankees. And don't forget the Yankees. Houston knocked out the Yankees twice
to get
to the World Series.
So if you're Rob Manfred, think about it. You had Houston win as opposed to either one of your two biggest markets on either coast. Mm-hmm. So, like, baseball took a hit with that one. But in a weird way, like, for all of us fans, like, it's anytime you could have a villain, it's better than not having one.
Very true.
In the big picture, I'd rather have someone to hate than a bunch of teams that I admire a reasonable amount.
I agree. I just think this is such a headache for Manfred that, you know, that's the one he'd want to do. For football, the one I came up with was this is more for Paul Tagliabue, but for the NFL, and this would have helped Goodell, if the first CTE report, when the first one came out there, they dropped everything and took it seriously instead of brushing it away. It would have saved them lawsuits, optics, and also would have meant that there wouldn't be as many parents not wanting their kids to play football if over a decade ago, you know, 15 years ago, the NFL was taking seriously head more seriously head trauma than they did in the early 2000s.
You know what I think would have been? That's a really good one. And if they would have applied that rigorous approach early, it probably would have gone away. It's like when a celebrity does something kind of wrong and they step up right away and apologize for it, as opposed to we just move on. Like, somebody will be outraged about something by the end of the day. You know, like, the more you resist, it's like getting gum caught in your hair. The more you resist, the worse it gets.
Yeah, it's like Becky or whoever it was from, we were talking about it today, Amy and I, Full House. If whoever the celebrities were, they should have apologized, said, yeah, you know what? We just loved our kids too much. We used our privilege. It stinks. We'll accept whatever punishment, and our kids going to community college. You do that 6 months ago, we're not talking about it.
You know, the whole scandal there really grosses me out. And I suppose it's because I believe in some kind of fair play, but who's kidding who? And I feel like I would probably do the same thing if I had the ability, but I don't have the ability, so I become outraged by it.
It's funny. I was actually arguing with Amy and Christy about it because they, like almost everyone else, is outraged by this. But are they really outraged by the individuals, or they just hate the idea that rich people get away with things?
Like, it's more of that, I think.
It's much more of that. If let's say a celebrity, Chris Hemsworth, let's say you read, oh, he had a DUI. They found him. He was asleep. His car was pulled over at the PCH. He was asleep. He tested over. He's got to use some community service. Bada bing, bada bang. We move on. We don't care. You know, we don't care that much. But this story, because it really taps into resentment, gets so much more play when really it's impacting 17 other students who should have gone to Stanford, while a DUI could kill someone. But we care more about the Full House woman than we do about a celebrity DUI.
Okay, so I got a weird one, and it's not as good as yours for the NFL. But I was thinking, if I was Roger Goodell and I would have a time machine and I could fix one thing for my league, it would be the 2006 NFC wildcard game where Tony Romo botches the snap against the Seahawks.
Ooh.
Because when you think about it, like, there's no guarantee that they would have gone on to win a lot. But let's just say there's an imaginary world where Romo becomes a Super Bowl winning champion and Dallas gets another ring. I think it's always good for leagues whenever they have alphas. And I think the discussion of 2000s football would have been really different if Tony Romo had actually won something on the biggest team in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they lost an opportunity for Dallas to be in the spotlight, which is always good for the NFL.
As long as that, I agree with you. But maybe if Romo wins that Super Bowl, he plays longer and he's not entertaining us in the TV booth.
It's hard to say. By the way, I think you tweeted out the other day, and I couldn't agree with you more. Hey, TV people, give Peyton all the money.
Yes, give him all the money. Like, he is so, like, it's funny. On one level, he is dull, boring, and nerdy, but his timing is great. He's legitimately funny. He doesn't seem to give a bleep. Like, this whole Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Brady, Peyton Manning golf tournament thing that's going on Sunday, the most, like, Peyton Manning, this is all on Peyton Manning's shoulders. He's the only one there that's going to make it entertaining. Like, unless they start using Charles Barkley, which I've heard about, but Phil will be mildly entertaining. Tiger's boring. Brady is boring. It's like, Peyton, we're going to need you to carry this. It's like Eddie Murphy on a bad SNL cast. It's like, okay, Eddie, you got to be funny for everyone.
It's funny you bring up SNL, because I think the moment where I fell in love with Peyton as a person, as opposed to just admiring his ability to commandeer a football team, was on SNL.
Of course.
His acting's really good. Like, think about the episode where they're the high school basketball team, and he's doing the silly dancing.
Yeah.
That's like one of the great sketches. Well, great sort of athlete performances for sure. God, Jordan was terrible. Barkley was terrible. But Peyton was really good.
Peyton was really good. For me, my favorite Peyton Manning moment was at the ESPYs when he took that shot at Durant. When he said that, when he talked about the American women's gymnastic team is so good and they're dominating so much that Kevin Durant thinks he wants to join them. That was a great line.
So good. You know who didn't think so?
It was so Durant.
Durant did not think that was so good.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Well, you love it too, because you're exactly, because this is what it, this might be your number one psychotic grudge right now.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely Durant. It's no, there's no doubt. It's 100%.
Well, he's left and gone to Brooklyn, and you're still mad about something he did in 2000 and what was it, 17?
Yeah, when he cowardly left OKC to go make the NBA boring for a couple of years. Thanks, Durant.
Did LeBron cowardly join Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh in Miami?
Yes, but Kevin Durant did it far worse, because Durant's team was up 3-1, and that OKC team had tons of talent. And, you know, at like Cleveland, that team was so horribly managed when sometimes LeBron's best second player was Daniel Booby Gibson. Booby Gibson! So get out of here! As bad as LeBron's was, Durant's like, hold my beer. What I'm going to do is far more cowardly.
It's pretty fun when you go back and you think about that LeBron first champion, not championship, but final team, finals team.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Man. There are some
horrible. Like,
Eric Snow.
Yeah.
Like, there's just some, who are these guys?
Igoskis? Like that's why when people go, Jordan was 6-0 in the finals, his team was favored every year. Do you think Cleveland was going to beat a stacked San Antonio team that'll end up having like four Hall of Famers and a Hall of Fame head coach versus Mike Brown, a bunch of losers, and LeBron? It's so dumb.
The Cleveland victory over Golden State, you can't call it a David and Goliath because, you know, Cleveland was an awfully good team.
And then Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love.
Totally. And, you know, arguably one of the three best players who ever lived. And it's a top-heavy kind of game. But when you just think about the stats and how favored Golden State was going into that.
Yeah.
And I know there was the Draymond Green crotch jump, and maybe that turned the whole series around. But whatever. The point is, God, what an incredible feat. Anyway, we're going down some kind of rabbit hole here. Gary Bettman, if he could go back in time and have one thing change, what would it be?
I think his first lockout, they never have a lockout. They figure it out. Maybe if he gets some reps of actually being a successful negotiator, then maybe that would have helped him and get momentum. So I'm going to go with that.
I'm going to stick with what we talked about yesterday, which is he goes and redoes the draft lottery where the ball falls and Edmonton wins Connor McDavid. What a missed opportunity. Like, him and Draisaitl are great, but honestly, league-wide, who cares? Could you imagine if McDavid was a Ranger or an LA King?
Yeah.
How much more you could do with him?
A ton more. Yeah, get him in LA. You know, it's like it goes from, you know, they've had their stars, and you put him there, and, you know, you still got Doughty, and you still got some of that infrastructure. 100%. Get him in LA.
Or maybe you would need him on the East Coast, because then you've got those NBC games, which nobody watches. But at least then, you know, you could have him on those weekly games. It'd be hard to do on the West Coast. They'd always be on the road to hit that 1 o'clock time slot.
What about Detroit?
Oh, man. Can you imagine McDavid in Detroit? great organization, or at least it has been, you know, historically. Original Six team. It's amazing.
Wait a minute. Sorry, and I don't know my timelines. I apologize. But the year that Connor McDavid was drafted, was Mike Babcock still coaching the Red Wings?
That's a great question. The answer would be yes.
So then maybe Mike Babcock, if McDavid was at Edmonton, does Babcock come to Toronto? Now we're doing this full Marvel Comics what if thing here.
Well, and you know, McDavid, how would he have liked being on the fourth line like Mitch Marner was? Because as you know, you got to earn those minutes.
Hey, Connor, could you write down a list of who works the hardest to who doesn't work the hardest on the team? Oh, thanks for that list. Hey, Cronwell, come over here. Yeah, get the rest. Hey, Zetterberg, get over here, guys. Let's. I want to sit down and read you a list.
Connor, can you write down the laziest players for me? Make yourself comfortable. I'm going to read it.
That happened. It actually happened.
That's so good. Oh, man, that is so good, Maddie. Okay, did we do basketball yet? Oh, yeah, basketball. Yet. What we talked about on the Forever Lost show was
Daryl
Morey, and that Adam Silver comes in and resets Daryl Morey's alarm so he never wakes up and sends out a tweet about Hong Kong.
Adam Silver messes with Daryl Morey's password, so Morey doesn't remember what it was, and he just gets frustrated. He goes, bleep it. I'll stand with Hong Kong another day.
You know, the NBA was riding such a wave of wokeness, you know, post-Sterling, and just with the way it treated its players and gave them a platform in ways maybe other leagues wouldn't. Although it's funny because, you know, the NFL, in a lot of ways, the players were more progressive when it came to taking a knee than the NBA players were. But you can't argue, like, the NBA is just much more progressive than most of the other leagues, if not all.
Yes.
Except this one time when billions of dollars were on the line and, you know, the expanding market of Chinese basketball was being threatened. Then they weren't so woke.
Then it's like, oh, how many people are China enslaving? Yeah, we'll get to it later. LeBron, shut up. And that was the irony, was that stupid woman, Laura Ingraham or whoever, telling LeBron to shut up and dribble. And then LeBron kind of did that to Daryl Morey.
That's actually true. It's funny because everybody loved Daryl Morey. He was like this super intelligent, radical out of the box thinker. And everybody loved Steve Kerr for being the same kind of guy. And then Daryl Morey tweets this. And did you notice Steve Kerr was like, well, you know, it's a very complicated issue and there are a lot of things to consider. And I don't want to wade into this necessarily before I've thought about it. It's like, it's the biggest story in the world for the last month. You didn't notice, Mr. Yeah. I have an opinion on everything else.
Steve Kerr's like, can I just say Trump's a racist and everyone pat me on the back again, please?
You can just see him standing there. God, you just wish, you know, it's too bad we're not doing what they said, what they meant anymore, because that would have been perfect for it. Has anyone seen the size of the check from China?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Could have feasted off that for a week. Like, that's literally we could show up 2 minutes before the show, because this what they said, what they meant literally wrote itself.
You know, it reminds me of Senator Geary in Godfather 2 when he's got the big check. And we have this magnificent endowment from a wonderful young man, Anthony Vito Corleone, made out to the university.
Oh, yeah.
And then behind scenes, like Senator Geary to Michael, I don't like you.
Speaking of movies. Do you want to do a little AMC as we wrap this up?
Yeah, you know what? We went too sporty today, but what the hell?
So I'm going to give you my list, and I want to hear yours, for your favorite hitmen/assassin movies.
Okay, go for it.
Because I love my top five. I love it. Number five, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Gross Point Blank. Number three, Collateral. Number two, The Long Kiss Goodnight. And number one, because I think they're just one big movie, Kill Bill.
Okay, so there's a lot of great ones there, and I've got some overlap. Hannah was just bubbling under for me. Mm-hmm. You got to put in The Professional.
It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah. Gross Point Blank, I love, and I'm so impressed that you threw that one on there. You know, it's
Dan Aykroyd. Dan Aykroyd is a great hitman as well.
He's so good. The soundtrack is so fun. Minnie Driver is like perfect as the confused former, you know, associate of John Cusack, who himself is so good. There's one that you didn't mention that is my number one, and it was clearly my number one, and I'm shocked it's not yours. Pulp Fiction.
I was debating that one as well, because I guess they are hitmen. I guess for me, that movie has so much more stuff going on that I just purposely left it out, but I can't argue with it being someone's number one.
But the whole thing is motivated by hitmen,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
it's like a hitman movie. And it's different than Reservoir Dogs because they're thieves, right?
Yeah.
This is the culture of, you know, whether it's the Marcellus Wallace, Mia Wallace side story, or, you know, Butch is on the run because the assassins are going to kill him because he threw the fight, or he won the fight. Yeah, I feel like this is the number one assassin movie of all time. By the way, Collateral is number two.
Yeah, I love Collateral. I mean, it's Michael Mann just at his peak. Jamie Foxx is great, and Tom Cruise as the villain was so good.
I think it's Michael Mann's best movie. I think it's Jamie Foxx's best movie. I think it's Tom Cruise's best performance. It's a masterpiece. It's a modern masterpiece, and it's such an oddly bleak movie too, considering all the popular people in it. Like, it feels like a big Hollywood movie, but it's like a little European art film in a way.
It is like the tension when he kills the one musician, but him dying at the end alone on the subway. They talked about the story earlier. You're right. It does have more of that smaller Euro feel.
You know, the way he dissects Jamie Foxx's character as being a guy who, you know, talks big but does nothing is so devastating. And then there's this moment from Tom Cruise where he says, you know, what I do for a living, like, who cares? There's 6 billion people on this planet and I kill, you know, two or three of them. Like, it will make no difference to anyone anywhere. And you're like, wow, gosh, you could justify a lot thinking that way.
You sure could.
I noticed that you didn't include the Bourne movies.
First off, I'm doing a top five. Stuff is going to be left out. In my honorable mentions, the Bourne movies were there. There's a lot of them that were there, but I had to pick my five favorite.
Yeah,
and again.
But the Bourne movies are so interesting because they're, once again, a combination of a little, like, it's the European art film version of a gigantic intellectual property blockbuster franchise. That's a really neat trick to pull off.
I agree, but, like, there's none of these five I want to take off. Like, I don't think a lot of people have seen Long Kiss Goodnight, but Gina Davis ranks only behind Sigourney Weaver in terms of greatest female action star. Well, maybe now Uma Thurman, and actually there's a couple you could throw in, but the point is she is great. Brian Cox is awesome. Samuel L. Jackson, before he became full Samuel L. Jackson, is batting 1,000 in this movie. I fully recommend people who haven't seen it to go check it out.
Okay, so I didn't include this movie, but I feel like maybe now I should have.
Mm.
But doesn't John Wick deserve to be here?
What do you take out?
Gross Point Blank.
I can't. Like, Gross Point Blank is so smart. And it's both a hitman movie that also deals with just so many classic problems that we go through in our own lives of loss, of remembering the past, of all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but Matt, like, the John Wick kills are so good.
At some point, though, they get a little repetitive. And does he at any point borrow a pen to kill an assassin?
You know, I forget which NBA player he kills in the third one, Parabellum. But it's a pretty great scene in the library where he...
Boban.
That's it. It's Boban. Thank you. And he offs him with the book. That's awfully good. Here's the thing about John Wick that I love is nobody expected it. And it was part of Keanu Renaissance. I feel like it was the Keanu Renaissance was absolutely cemented with John Wick.
Agreed.
It was so unlikely. Like, didn't you look at this and kind of roll your eyes and you're like, oh, like French Connection must have been once in the day where you go, it's just another carbon copy cop movie. And then you're like, oh, wait, it's awesome. Like, I kind of felt the same way about John Wick. It's like, I expect this to be stupid. And it was like, it's stupid and awesome.
I agree. Oh, no, like, these are all great movies. I ain't arguing with any of them.
Yeah.
It's just a top five's a top five. And it's a huge list. It's so rich that it's hard. But
okay, you know. so let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Is the key to a good assassin slash hitman movie the code of honor?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It's a nice dichotomy. It's like hockey players that fight each other, then have a beer afterwards. It's weird, but it's also appealing on a very primal level.
You know, like Ghost Dog is an assassin movie, and it goes back to like the idea of the samurai, or that there's a code of ethics in how you do this. And that's one of the things that's so cool about Collateral, is it actually kind of just thumbs its nose at that. You know, even Pulp Fiction to a degree is about code of honor. Like Jules finds a conscience, Vincent can't sleep with Mia Wallace. Now he does it for very smart reasons. He doesn't want to piss off Ving Rhames. But the whole movie is kind of about a code. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're very moral movies.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to like just a movie about criminals.
It's always the fun thing about these good criminal movies, that they have their own set of ethics, which is a fun sort of dichotomy, considering their ethics. You know, half the time they're murdering or robbing, and then they also have ethics.
You know, it reminds me of like when I'm watching John Wick, and I think the moment where it really took off for me wasn't necessarily just the way that they shoot each other or how stylish John Wick looked, but it was the hotel. It was the Continental. It was the whole idea of like the gold coins, and that there's this whole sub-universe of rules and regulations and interconnections. And that's where John Wick becomes more than just a shoot 'em up.
Yep. And it changes it. Absolutely.
I think that's why I put it there, because the world they created is so fun. Like, I feel like you could tell, like, the Fast and Furious franchise has a world, but basically it's just fast cars doing crazy things.
Yes.
John Wick to me feels like we're just scratching the surface of where this story could go.
Yep. Bob?
Are you wrapping up?
Yeah, we got to go. But can I give my summation of the Fast and Furious?
Sure.
It's fast cars and upskirt cams.
Wait, I'm gonna take that one step further. You ready?
Yeah.
Sports cars and underboob.
Bob, we got to end it. That's a perfect note to end this.
That's, you know what? We got to create a whole new genre of film. Sports cars and underboob.
You, yeah. Vin Diesel, he gets paid a lot of money to not say a lot of words. Bob, and we will talk early next
week. All right, Maddie, catch up with you on Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.